Next hour, it's all about the paranormal and UFOs, but this hour we're talking with Mark Seifer about the life of Nikola Tesla, and we're going to take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Mark Seifer with us. Mark, what do you think Tesla's best invention was? Do you think it was alternating current?
I think that he had two, and I would say the hydroelectric power system and the induction motor, which is all part of one giant invention. The interesting thing about the hydroelectric power system, it's non-polluting and it runs forever as long as the water falls. So it's a perfect situation where he can light up, we do, you know, the entire Northeast from Niagara Falls without polluting the air and without sapping the earth of any energy. And his other invention is wireless communication. I mentioned, you know, cell phone technology. He figured out how to create an unlimited number of wireless channels. And I think that those are his two greatest inventions.
He was born in Serbia, became a United States citizen in 1891. What got him and his family over to the United States? Do you know?
Yeah, he didn't take his family over. He came by himself.
He did. Okay.
And he was working for Edison in Paris in 1883. And he wanted to work for Edison in America. And he wanted to come here to give us, you know, because he had the alternating current invention, he wanted to give it to the greatest inventor, you know, the genius from Menlo Park and the Napoleon of invention. So he was looking forward to meeting, you know, the Mickey Mantle of the day. And then, unfortunately, they didn't get along.
Marconi has been credited with inventing the radio, but what about Tesla?
Well, I think Marconi deserves a lot of credit because Tesla, you know, Tesla never developed Wardenclyffe. The big giant tower was never built, whereas Marconi had, you know, hundreds, maybe even thousands of wireless stations all over the place. But Marconi had to pirate Tesla's apparatus. Tesla invented the fundamental principle underneath it all. And so we needed, Marconi needed that in order, you know, to harness his radio empire. And eventually, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it was really based on Tesla's work. So Tesla gets credited as the inventor. But without Marconi, we wouldn't have had all this that happened. I mean, Tesla failed.
He made mistakes, didn't he?
Yeah, I would have asked him, you know, why didn't you drop back and punt, you know? I mean,
he was incapable of punting.
Yeah.
He sounded like he was a stubborn guy.
Well, he was either going to do the entire thing or not at all, and I think he should have, you know, ate a little humble pie and did smaller, you know, just do the wireless telephone from
right,
you know, and that would and built up on that. But he wanted the entire project or none at all, and that's the sad reality.
He could have, I think, had he not been so stubborn, he was a genius, but he could have learned from other people.
Yeah, he could have. And in fact, he could have actually, Marconi offered him a partnership, but he was only going to pay him in stock, and Tesla wanted cash, and so they couldn't come to an agreement.
Stock might have been worth a fortune, huh?
Yeah, it could have been.
At this point, that's something. One thing I wanted to ask you. He would be marveling, because the wireless was basically his invention. He would be marveling at the fact that we could send pictures to other people through our phones.
Yes.
Through the air. Whoosh, it's there, and then you receive it. It's incredible.
You know, and also what occurs to me is how the smartphone, you know, the digital camera knocked out Kodak, and then the smartphone knocked out digital camera. And I think, you know, we're talking about the COVID thing. Ozone therapy would knock out a lot of the medications that we don't need because it kills viruses. It could cure malaria. It could cure all, you know, hepatitis. There's Epstein-Barr. So I think that's, you know, that's the nature of the world that we live in, that a new invention comes along and it knocks out an old invention.
I had a person working for me years ago, Mark, and I asked her to send a fax for me. I said, here's the number, and here's, you know, what I need faxed. And then we set it up on the machine, and you dialed the number, pushed it through, and then I went back and started working on some of the things. She came back about a half hour later with the fax in her hand, obviously. And she said, it didn't go through. And I said, well, let's resend it. I went to the machine, and there was a copy of what you send. And it said it went through. And I said, no. I said, it went through. It's. She said, it did not go through. I said, it says it went through. She said, how could it go through? I'm holding it.
Yeah, there's so much of that. It's unreal.
Let's go to the phones. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for accepting my call.
Sure,
and
thanks.
Mark, this is such a great conversation. Mark, my understanding was that before Tesla died, he had worked out an idea for, well, I'll call it a forever battery. He had worked out an idea for battery technology that was orders of magnitude over our conventional batteries. I mean, I'm talking 1,000, 10,000 times in terms of storage capacity. And when you stop and think about it, like hydroelectric power, okay, you need a distribution network, you know, through power lines, et cetera. You know, also, he had the idea of broadcasting power, but with a forever battery, you could collect solar power, say, in the Sahara Desert, store it in a battery, and then distribute the batteries around the world, okay, without a distribution network. As an example, what am I talking about? You could have a battery in a car that would be for the life of the car, okay? You could have a battery in a home that would be for the life of the home, 50, 100 years type of thing. I mean, it would take forever for it to discharge totally. And the idea of a super battery, a forever battery, would be revolutionary. Militarily, you could protect against electromagnetic pulse because electromagnetic pulse takes down a power grid. But if you had decentralized batteries powering homes, factories, ships, airplanes, etc., you could just protect the battery and shield the battery itself, and you would still have a power source. And so I'm wondering, I read about this like in the 1970s, this idea of developing these super batteries and forever batteries. And I was wondering if you would comment on that and what you know about it. And thank you for everything that you're doing in terms of the research. I look forward to obtaining your latest Tesla book. Thank you very much, Mark.
Okay.
There you go, Mark.
A very interesting question.
Absolutely.
A lot of that has to do with the ether. And you know, there's, you know, the Higgs boson, what gives matter its mass? And the Higgs boson really is just a way of renaming the ether. And what occurred to me, similar to what this gentleman was talking about, is a magnet. How come a magnet doesn't run out of energy?
Never.
I think that there's a huge secret here. Tom Bearden talks about this. That there's a big missing chunk here because the ether must exist, and it's providing energy for the standing waves for the particles that circle the atom, and so what I'm thinking of a magnet that it's comparable to the battery that he's talking about. So I think that's a big question. I would like a physicist to answer to me as to why, a magnet doesn't run out of power.
Did Tesla ever get married or anything like that?
No, Tesla was celibate, and there's a big question about his sexuality.
Okay.
But I really think that he devoted himself to science, and he had a lot of women friends, and he had a lot of men friends, and a lot of them were married. He was very good friends with Corrine Robinson. She was
who's that?
Teddy Roosevelt's sister.
Oh, okay. Right. And he died at 86, so he had a pretty nice long life.
Yes, he had an amazing life. And his life gets more and more interesting. You know, I'm working on a miniseries, and we're trying to get it done. And the thing about his life, to me, is that when you study his life, it gets more and more interesting with each decade. You know, everyone talks about the War of the Currents and Wardenclyffe, which are two amazing stories. But he has a very interesting life during World War One. He's working for Telefunken, the German wireless concern. And Telefunken had their wireless systems on U.S. Navy ships before we got into the war. So it was perfectly all right for him to work for the Germans at that time. And then World War II, he's got the particle beam weapon. So his life gets more and more fascinating as you go through his life.
What's interesting, the life expectancy in the United States for a man in 1940, he died in 1943, was 61 years old, and he lives to 86. I mean, how did he pull that off?
Yeah, he was very interested in nutrition. He came up with something called Factor Actus, which was a special diet that was honey and cauliflower hearts and celery sticks. And
so he ate well.
Yeah, he was very interested in that. But I also think that he became a bit anorexic. When you look at the old pictures when he's really old, he kind of stopped eating. And I think that's really what killed him, was he didn't eat enough later in life, but he lived a very long life.
Did he get too thin?
Yes, way too thin.
Yeah, that could happen.
Skeletal in the last, you know, year of his life. I had spoken to this fellow, Ralph Bergstresser, who was working for military intelligence, meeting with Tesla in 1942. He died in early 43, and he said Tesla was like a walking skeleton, but he was still sharp as a tack. You know, his mind was still really sharp. So, you know, it's a fascinating story.
First time caller, Darla in Spokane, Washington. Welcome to the show. Hi, Darla. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, George. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I wanted to comment on the ozone. I have a sleep apnea machine, and I bought the box that does the ozone cleaning.
It's a CPAP for you, right? Is that what it is? It's one of those CPAPs?
I have a CPAP machine.
Yeah.
But the cleaning machine is something else you get.
Okay.
It's advertised on TV. I don't want to say the name. And so I throw the mask in there and turn it on. It runs for 8 minutes, and then it sits for 3 hours and cleans all the bacteria and everything. So I throw my car keys in there with it. I'll throw my toothbrush in there. I'll throw my mask. And that ozone, it smells so fresh. I mean, you're not supposed to breathe it, probably. But I just, when you said that about the ozone, yeah. I mean, it cleans the mask and all the whole machine, so you don't have to. So I thought that was interesting.
What do you think of that, Mark?
Well, in doing my research, I learned about the ozone layer. This is an unbelievable thing I'm going to tell you. And that is that every day when the sun hits the oxygen in the atmosphere, it converts O2 to O3, which is the ozone layer.
That's right.
And the ozone layer is a blue gas. That's why the sky is blue. Now, the fascinating part about this for me, if we didn't have the ozone layer, we would have no life on the planet, because what ozone does is it converts the deadly UV rays from the sun to it absorbs them and allows life to evolve on the planet. What I found so fascinating is that the ozone layer is only a half an inch thick. So when we look up at the blue sky, we think it's maybe miles thick. It's a half an inch. That's how fragile and how incredible life is on this planet. I mean, we have to thank our Creator for this amazing place. And, you know, when the FDA says ozone's a toxic gas, my God, if we didn't have an ozone layer, there would be no life on the planet. And I think the FDA has to be held accountable. They are responsible for this pandemic. They are responsible for blocking the most important way that we could cure this problem, and that is through ozone therapy. And there's hundreds of articles on ozone therapy which shows its efficacy, not 10 or 20 articles, hundreds of articles going back 30, 40, 50 years. So that's what I think when she was talking about that. The ozone layer, it protects us and allowed life to evolve on this precious planet that we have.
Some hotels use ozone generators to clean out the fumes of smoke and things like that in the rooms.
Yes, and hospitals use it to disinfect rooms, and municipal water supplies use ozone generators to disinfect water supplies. You know, Trump wasn't too wrong when he said about, you know, drinking bleach. He didn't understand totally what he was
right.
saying.
Well, you know, I used to have a horse farm, and they would recommend that you put a cup of bleach down the well once a month to kill any bacteria.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a cup, not the whole gallon or anything like that.
What he didn't understand was that if we can do it in a normal, you know, way, in an analogous way that our body is producing ozone. One of the things that I also learned was why he was able to be cured so quickly. He had COVID, and in 3 or 4 days he was cured. What they did was they gave him coronavirus antibodies. Now, they must have given him, you know, billions of these particles, and these antibodies were producing ozone. And so that's what I
think. And he was also taking hydrochloroquine before he got sick.
Yes, and he was also taking oxygen, too. So the combination of all those things, and, you know, thank heavens he was, you know, cured so quickly.
I mean, but, you know, when you get the flu and you fight it off, you can get it again next year and the year after, right? So I assume with COVID, if you had it, it doesn't mean you're immune to it, does it?
Well, COVID is a coronavirus and it mutates. Ozone therapy will knock out all mutations. The reason why you get the flu again is you get a different strain. We build up antibodies. The immune
okay,
system
that makes
has
sense.
An amazing memory. It remembers all these different things. So if you get the flu again, it's a slightly different strain. And that's the danger of these new mutations, like coming out of England. Ozone doesn't care. It'll knock out all viruses. It punches holes in the lipid envelope of the virus.
So if restaurants would buy ozone generators, wouldn't that help?
Yes, it would definitely help. And a lot of them do have that. You mentioned hotels. Hospitals use it. And dentists also, they use ozone therapy for infected, you know, things in the mouth. And also they clean their utensils with ozone.
Sam in Traverse City, Michigan, let's get you in before the break, Sammy. Go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Mark. On the ozone info, I want to help coast to coast as long as you'll help. Let me. You got to look at Harold E. Burt's site, aliensEverythingYouWantedToKnow.com. It's packed to the hilt to whet your appetite. See, everyone knows already, astronauts, the moon, and government projects. And then I want you to look at Captain, it's only CAPT, EJ's, EJ apostrophe S, Explorations. And Mark, did you know about Marconi's Vortex Dynamo? And the question is, she's mentioned in this site, and I don't necessarily believe all of it, but you have to think about what's been going on, and Paul Hellyer and everything, and what Paul Hellyer said about Forrestal's bird expedition.
Well, interesting take. So he's kind of got the alien theory here with some of this stuff, Mark.
Yeah, well, Tesla has a big connection, and also Marconi said that he wanted to create a way to talk to the stars. But in 1899, Tesla received impulses on his equipment, and he was convinced that they came from Mars. And so,
really?
Yes, and that's why that's one of the primary reasons why his name disappeared from history books, because people thought that he was a nut, because he said he had talked to extraterrestrials. But the big question was, what did he actually receive?
Somebody gave him information. He was way too bright.
Well, the Quorum brothers did an interesting experiment. Jim and Ken Quorum, they're Tesla experts. They think that it was a pulse frequency coming from one of the moons of Jupiter. So what happens when you study Tesla, you learn about all these different things, like, you know, Tunguska, the explosion, you know, in Siberia.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, Mark, when we come back with final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we're going live to the United Kingdom to talk with Richard Lawrence about his work with UFOs and the paranormal. So make sure you're part of Coast to Coast, and don't forget our program note. We are live for you tomorrow night on Christmas Eve and on Christmas night. So when you're done with your festivities with friends or family, or if you're simply just waiting for the radio show, you know where to find us, and we'll be taking your calls too. As a matter of fact, on Christmas night, I'll have a couple hours of open lines towards the end. We'll talk about angels and miracles and get some of your calls like that. And welcome back, our final segment with Mark Seifer, as we are talking about the life of Nikola Tesla. And this alien tie-in with him was pretty fantastic. I mean, did he actually feel as if he might have had some kind of intervention there, Mark?
Yes, he felt that, you know, he was the most important inventor on the planet, who else would they want to speak to but him? And so when he received those three impulses in 1899, he wrote about that I have, you know, received impulses. You know, there were a lot of people that believed in life on Mars in those days. And, you know, H.G. Wells was writing about it. Daphne du Maurier's father was writing about it. And even today, the articles all the time, possible water on Mars, maybe there's life underneath there. So there's still a lot of belief in that. But it was a group fantasy, I think, at the time. And he was part of that.
War of the Worlds, too, during that era, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. That came out in 1897, I think.
Let's go to Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Edward.
Hey, George. Thanks for being here for us on the holiday.
Absolutely.
And next 2 days and the face on Mars. I still contend that's Popeye's wife. and to me, it's a signature like a painter does on a picture. It was saying, here's what we look like. We're humans, and we built these. Mark, I love Tesla, and I got a question for you, but I'd like to solidify a few things that you mentioned. When he worked for Edison, Edison actually was pushing, he was in competition with direct current, which wouldn't go but so many blocks. Never would have worked. But he electrocuted dogs on stage with alternating current to try to scare people away from the competition. He also stole some of Tesla's work. And that's when Tesla started putting everything in notebooks, and not until he got patents. He had a lot of stuff nobody knew about, as you know. And so as time went by the way, he had the biggest Tesla coil. It took the Air Force until 75 years, until 1962, to get one as big. And it started shaking the building once in New York, and the fire department came. And he had a rubber mat. He let Samuel Clemens and people stand on, hand him a fluorescent light bulb, and he'd make it light up with no wires to either end. And it was a great laxative, by the way. But anyway, so as he went along, he late in life, when he passed away, George, they had a top scientist from MIT go in his room the first 3 days. He was the only person in the room, and he showed them what should be classified. You know who it was? It was Donald Trump's uncle. His name's Trump.
Huh.
My question, I mean, I could talk on some other things, but Mark, I love your specializing on Tesla. This is great. And here's my question. Also, ozone theory and my health stuff. I had some 50 years ago in the 70s, and it cleans all the toxins out of the blood. The problem with some of the autoimmune, which unfortunately I had, is it doesn't get rid of the source, so it kind of comes back on you on that. But you're right. It can kill off viruses and so forth. And I'm the one that mentioned the ivermectin, right? I was on hold when Joe from Long Island just mentioned it. But
right.
Yeah, I went into it a while back and went to my pharmacist to see if she knew what it was. She said, "You mean for parasites?" I said, "Yeah, for humans." She said, "Let me look." She said, "I got some in inventory." I said, "Good. The problem's going to get my doctor prescribing. It's the problem."
That's right.
So, and here's my question. Tesla would not go in a building until he walked around it three times. He would not stay in a hotel room, which he did late in his life in New York. By the way, one reason I think he didn't live as long, he got hit by a car crossing the street in New York, and that really, it almost killed him. It really hurt him badly.
He got to 86, though. That's pretty good.
I know, but that's about when he got hit, though. That's why he might have gone quite a bit longer.
You are a good point.
Anyway, he wouldn't stay in a room in New York unless it was divisible by three. And so he also said 9 was the most important number. And so I wanted to ask you if you found anything out about what his thinking was on any of that math stuff.
Yeah, it was very interesting. When we were in the Hotel New Yorker, we went up into his room, and Joe Kenny, who had worked in the building for 15, 20 years, mentioned his room was 3327. That if you look at it, 3 cubed is 27. So he picked a very special number. He was a mathematical genius. I've looked through all of his notes, and I can't understand a lot of the calculations. He had calculated the size of the Earth, the speed of light, and he calculated the difference, the wobbles that the Earth took, and that there were different sizes from different points of view. So the tower would be different heights depending on where it would be on the Earth. And so if he wanted to send electrical power, say, from Long Island to San Francisco, say it was 3,000 miles, he would calculate how to create a a wave, an electrical wave that would land 3,000 miles away. If he wanted to go to Chicago, maybe it'd be 800 miles. So he'd recalculate what type of frequency he would need to do that. So he was a mathematical genius, and everything you said is exactly correct.
We have Michael in Denver. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George. Wow, it's so great to be here on Christmas Eve. Thank you so much for, again, being here for all of us.
We
really
will be.
Means a lot to me on a personal note, so thank you.
Thank you.
And Mark, wow, such amazing research you've done on Nikola Tesla. Thank you so much for conducting it. And as a younger person myself, it really means a lot to me, so thank you. I had a comment and a question tonight. So when I was in middle school, we were tasked to do an assignment, pick a notable scientist to do a report on. And while most of the kids were picking people like Stephen Hawking, Galileo, Isaac Newton, I decided to pick Nikola Tesla. I've always had an interest in him. And when I went to my teacher, I said I wanted to do the report on Nikola Tesla. And he said, Michael, there's not a lot of written curriculum on Tesla. It's going to be kind of hard to do this report. And a long story short, I ended up doing the report and getting an A+ on it. So my question is, why do you think that modern curriculum and academia kind of extracts Tesla's accomplishments from the history books? Thank you.
The reason had to do with competition. It started with Charles Steinmetz. Once Tesla and Westinghouse won the war of the currents, General Electric was stuck with the wrong inventions. And so when Charles Steinmetz, who was a brilliant mathematician, wrote a book on the alternating current system, that became the textbook. And somehow he leaves Tesla's name out of it. And the reason was because he was working for GE, and GE was in a legal dispute, a patent dispute, with Westinghouse, which owned the Tesla patents. It's kind of like, it's exactly like writing a book on the theory of relativity and, oh, forgetting to put Einstein's name in the book. I mean, that's exactly what happened. So his name was taken out by his competitors. L.U. Thompson removed his name. Michael Pupin, who was teaching at Columbia University, removed his name from the history books. So there was a lot of that, and it had a lot to do with competition and jealousy.
What do you do to get the FDA to look at ozone generators?
I think they have to own up to the fact that they have made the proclamation that ozone is a toxic gas with no medical application. They used that to block a group in Texas, Texas Health Center, who wanted to use ozone therapy to treat COVID. And that was they got the courts to block that. And as I mentioned, Wentworth, who's a PhD chemist from Scripps Institute, found that our own body produces ozone, our antibodies produce ozone to kill viruses and bacteria. So if they say ozone is a toxic gas with no medical application, that statement is easily disproved by Wentworth, and it's also easily disproved by Dr. Alberto Hernandez from Ibiza, Spain, who's done these clinical trials and proven that the group that get ozone therapy were out of the hospital in 7 days as compared to the control group, which is 28 days. The FDA is responsible for this pandemic. There's no two ways about it. And Dr. Fauci has got to own up to the fact that all he has to do is look at the research or simply listen to your incredible program that we discussed today. And just look at Paul Wentworth's research and look at Dr. Alberto Hernandez's work with COVID patients and also all the research going on in Italy, in Wuhan, China, and also in Sierra Leone. And just speak to Dr. Robert Rowan in Santa Rosa, California, or Dr. Howard Robbins in New York City. These are ozone therapists who have been ozone therapists for 25 years, more than 25 years. They've done this tens of thousands of times. It's perfectly safe. I think the onus is really on Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci is a brilliant scientist, and this is not complicated stuff. If our body produces ozone, which is what Paul Wentworth discovered from Scripps Institute, that's clearly out proof that their proclamation that ozone's a toxic gas with no medical value is ridiculous. And is that proclamation that has turned off? I've sent this to Neuro O'Donnell. I've sent it to Jake Tapper, you know, every single talking head you can think of. And they don't do anything.
No, well, maybe they'll listen to this program and someone will say, aha, let's do it.
All we need is one medical doctor in one hospital to speak to Dr. Robert Rowan. He will come to the hospital. I'm working with him this way. And he will teach them this. And the people in the ICUs, within a week, the vast majority of them will walk out of there virus-free. That's what Dr. Hernandez discovered. These are medical doctors. I'm not making this thing up. These are actual medical doctors who have done this work. And there's hundreds of articles on this. So, and the thing about it is, I learned all this because of Tesla. Tesla, you know, built the first ozone generator that was, you know, usable in 1896. He patented it, and he started to sell ozone machines in the turn of the century to raise money to go back to Wardenclyffe. And what Tesla said was, we are masters of the globe, but we are at the mercy of unseen forces. He was talking exactly about our situation right now. And the real problem, George, is not COVID. COVID has a 97% survival rate. If a new virus comes out that kills like Ebola and spreads like COVID, that's what we're really up against. We can't wait for a vaccine, which takes a year to develop. This is a therapy that will work
instantly. That's right. Let's go to Chris in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Chris, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Sure. Hi. Well, I also am calling you about ozone. I just want to clarify a few things. The guest says that ozone is toxic. I suppose in one way it's true. It's a very strong oxidant. It's very aggressive. So I think if people are considering using ozone at home without medical supervision, they should study a little bit. They can get an ozone generator. They can. They should not breathe ozone. Very aggressive. It will make them bleed. I'm sure the author will, well, I mean, the guest will agree with that. And one way to use ozone is to use rectal insufflation. I'm sorry. Does that make sense?
Well, why are hotels? Chris? Why are hotels using ozone generators?
If they need to sterilize a room, for example, disinfect a room, they do that at high ozone level when nobody is in the room.
Okay. But so, at what point can you go back in the room?
Well, you air out the room, and or you just let it sit for a long time, and ozone disappears. It turns into oxygen.
Mark, let's get your thoughts on that. What do you think?
Yeah, he's exactly right. Ozone is a unstable form of oxygen, and in about a half an hour, it'll reduce back from O3 to O2. And you should not breathe it in. But everything that he said is correct.
So you need to give it some time to filter out. And how do you know it's gone?
It will not hurt you if mild forms of it. You know, if you're in a giant ozone generator around there, it's dangerous. But the kind of ozone generators that you're going to purchase for $100 are not going to, you know, they're not going to injure you.
So if you have an ozone generator that you buy commercially, set it up in your house, plug it in, and turn it on, and it's running constantly, is that good or bad?
I would say not to do that.
You would not do that.
No.
Okay.
For the most part, you should be out of the, you know, not be in the...
Is that what the FDA meant, by the way, that it's toxic?
What the FDA, they said it has no medical application. So they have denigrated all the ozone therapists in this country and around the world.
Okay.
If you just breathe it in, yeah, it is toxic. But I'm not talking about it that way. I'm talking about going to a medical doctor that's trained in this, and they inject the gases into the bloodstream in a very slow manner. And these doctors, I'm telling you, they've done it hundreds of thousands of times. And the death rate is minuscule.
Check into this ivermectin parasite, okay?
I definitely want to. That's very, very interesting.
Could be something.
I'll say one other thing, George. I learned so much listening to you and your show. I mean, and there's the similarity to Tesla. You study Tesla, you keep learning and learning and learning. And that's what your show does, you know. You stimulate the brain. It really charges your brain just listening to all the things that you discuss.
All right. Don't forget, book yourself in April when the other book on Tesla comes out, Mark. We look forward to getting you back. 4 years was way too long to have you come back. In a moment, we're going live to the United Kingdom. We're going to be talking about paranormal UFOs next.